Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. People's Radio. It's all the G up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will. The Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RNG fam is like, woo! Nah, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
You don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like this. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be beat.
Don't get no more realer.
Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports, RSG Renegade Radio. This is Marcus, the Game Changer, one-third of the illustrious three-man booth. And first and foremost, we'd like to thank you for joining us this evening. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with us, and we greatly appreciate your patronage. Now, before we get into the proceedings this evening, allow me to introduce the other two-thirds of the illustrious three-man booth. To my right, I got my man, 100 grand, D. Wills. How that people?
What's up? What's up? I just want to thank the Hammer for helping us out with the first edition of the Funky Editorial Extended. He was definitely off the hook, but it feels good to get back in the rotation and have a PhD. Playing that mid-range game, going off the glass. So I'm glad to be back with the crew, rolling on a regular night.
Yes, sir. Shout out to the Hammer. We're gonna have to put out a special edition called "Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him." Hammer brought the pain last night, man. Man, that cat was going back and forth for a good minute, man. It was enjoyable, man. That was a. We may have to get him in the ring with Justin.
Oh my goodness.
We might break the internet.
That would be a classic.
That definitely goes on the list of things that will break the internet. We had a, for those that aren't aware, we have a new addition to the RSG fam, to the RSG brand. We have the Funky Editorial Extended. You can download that on iTunes through our website, realsportsguys.com. The Funky Editorial Extended is kind of an extension of the segment of our show, the Funky Editorial. And, you know, we do an hour-long. We did an hour-long piece on it. We hit a couple of topics, but we went super deep. It's a lot of good banter, a lot of good back and forth. It's definitely, you know, the barbershop style. Sports talk that we like to bring to you all at its best. So So make sure if you get an opportunity to check that out, hit us up at realsportsguys.com. Make sure you download that. It's an hour long. Check it out. Funky Editorial Extended. Now, there's one third of the illustrious three-man booth that's waiting on his intro. He's got his snaps still on. He's ready to rip them off, run through the tunnel, do his little shake-up. And that's my man, Phil T. Sports, PhD. What's happening, Captain?
Present.
As always. Now, we got the gang. The gang's all here. The GO team is in full effect. We're going to ride this one out and get right into it. Now, to start out the show, we started the show with the intro to let you know. That's where we give you a real quick rundown of all of the things that we plan to give to you tonight. Now, in true RSG fashion, we may get caught up on something or we get too deep into it. And, you know, we're not going to try to outthink the room. If we got a play that's working, we're going to say play over and over and over and over. We're going to beat you over the head with it. So if we got a good conversation going, we're going to keep it going. We're not going to try and get pretty with it and run a reverse or, you know, throw the half court oop, unless it's there. You feel me? Unless it's been set up appropriately. So tonight.
That is Lester's there, like Hubie Brown.
Exactly.
And Lester's there. Right. Steve Fisher was okay with the alley-oop if it was there.
Right. You know, that's the coach coming out right there. You know, and everybody's got that inner Hubie Brown. You got to pull it out every from time to time. Tonight, we got some Super Bowl talk. We're going to get into that. We have a special guest coming on. When he gets in, we'll give you the intro and have him come on. We're going to keep that under wraps for a minute. We also have, during the Funky Editorial, we're going to talk about the Boston situation. With the Boston situation, Rajon Rondo tore his ACL. We have to ask the question, is this the end of the Boston three-party, the big three era in Boston? Is the foundation shook to the point where they may have to blow it up and rebuild from the ground up? We're going to talk about that. We're going to hit you off with some NCAA hoops talk, giving you kind of an early primer for February, because February is a big month. People don't understand that. Us real hoop heads understand how important February is. Because February, if you didn't know, you know, in case you didn't know, you wasn't aware, February is the month before March, all right? February is the month before March, which means March Madness. And so if you got to start paying attention in February so you're ready for March. And so what we're going to do, we're going to take you through and give you some things you need to be looking for throughout this February so that when it comes time to pick those sleepers, to pick those bracket busters, you got the knowledge you need to have. To dominate that bracket pool, you feel me, and get that money. Got to get your hands on that money, straight cash, homie, as Randy Moss once said. Then we're going to hit you with the five on the black-hand side. And then the five on the black-hand side, we're going to go best of 2012 on you. You know, the world was supposed to end, but it didn't. The Mayans were wrong. As I told a lot of people, maybe they just got tired of writing, you know? I mean, it's possible. I mean, yep, maybe the world is going to end on December 21st, 2012, but maybe they just said, you know, we went far enough. Let's just stop. And I think that was probably the most logical thing that you could have thought of. It was a conclusion you could have came from the whole Mayan calendar deal. At some point, they had to stop. It wasn't going to go on forever. So we're going to go through some of our best of 2012. We're going to hit you off with Onions and then the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. All right, right now, we're gonna jump in, and as soon as I get my screen going, we're going to hit you off with the Funky Editorial. So let's just jump into it, all right? Now, we're talking about the Funky Editorial this week. In the Funky Editorial, we're talking about Rajon Rondo. You know, before this weekend's game, the Sunday's game against the Miami Heat was discovered. I mean, it seems like literally right before the game, Doc Rivers, in an interview after the game, said about 24 minutes before the game, Rondo was still in the lineup. He had to be rushed to the hospital. They took a look at his leg. He had injured his leg, I think, the night in their previous game against the Hawks. in which they were up by 27 points and squandered that lead and wound up losing that game in overtime. He injured himself towards the end of that game. Kind of looked like he tweaked his knee. Didn't look like a major deal. He did need to come out. So they're preparing for their next game, and it looks like there's some complications with that particular knee. They go and get it checked out, and Rondo has a torn ACL. Now, Doc Rivers knows this. None of his teammates know it until after the game. He shows up to the arena, has a seat behind the bench while, you know, his teammates are playing. They play a very strong game, defeat the Miami Heat in double overtime in one of the better games of this season. And then his teammates find out. Now, as the trade deadline approaches, the question has to be asked, what's next for Boston? They're not the same. They were struggling already. They're two games below 500, sitting in the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference, and kind of trying to figure out their way. They have a lot of young pieces in place when you're talking about Avery Bradley, Jeff Green, Jared Sullinger, nice young pieces, along with Rondo. They have the core of the big three still there with Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett. They have some ancillary pieces in Jason Terry, Brandon Bass, guys like that who are role players at this point in their careers. But things just weren't quite coming together for them as a squad overall. You know, as we say, you know, as my man P.A.C. said, the curl just wasn't quite turned over.
Right. Right.
So I'm going to pull in my man P.A.C. Danny Ainge. GM, president, Boston Celtics, the decision maker. This guy makes all the decisions as far as player personnel goes. What does he do going forward? Are you blowing this up? Are you going to ride this out? If you're Danny Ainge, PhD, what do you do?
I think you let it ride out. You have one of the best coaches in the game right now, in Doc Rivers. You have as much talent as anybody in the Eastern Conference, with the exception of the Miami Heat. So, you know, right now I think they're in the seventh or eighth seed, and I believe they're much better than that, even without Rondo. So keep in mind, this is a team that took the Miami Heat to seven games in the conference finals just this past 2012 season. A lot of people forget about that. I mean, they had a 3-2 lead on Miami Heat. So when you look at their core of Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, you add Jason Terry in, like you mentioned, you got a young Sullinger. In a lot of ways, you won't get the value back. It would make sense if it was 3 or 4 years ago where you would get much higher value back for a Kevin Garnett. Much higher value back for a Pierce, for a Ray Allen if he still had him. So I think their best bet right now is let it ride out. If they need to make some moves, do it in the off season. You know, I think they have the core that they can make one more push, run this season. And, you know, even if things don't work out this season, Rondo, hopefully you have to bet that he'll come back healthy and playing. I mean, this guy was a starter in the All-Star game, so he was playing some of the best basketball in the league, short of Chris Paul, so at the point guard position. But if I am the GM, I'm keeping it together and letting Doc run this team.
Okay, so PAZ's gonna ride this out. I agree with you. There's a lot of talent on this roster. I would say if I was to kind of assess how things are going right now, I would say given the talent that they have, they're definitely underperforming. But I also did what you're saying. They have one of the best coaches in the league. They have a veteran squad still, even though they have some young pieces in place. They still have a very veteran squad. They could easily turn this around and put things together. So I can definitely see the logic behind staying the course. Now, D. Wills, why don't you weigh in and give me your perspective on What should Danny Ainge do? What's the next play here?
I think there's some merit to staying the course, but I just posted two trade scenarios. That trade machine that they got on Was it ESPN.com? I love that thing. You play with that thing and throw some things
up.
Got me in here. I just discovered that thing. I think you've been up in, you know, but the person I think that you could move if you did move, you got the right pieces back, would be Paul Pierce. One of the trades that I put out there, you know, Denver's a team that I think is caught up in, I think they're kind of in purgatory. In a sense, they got a lot of talent. There's some young talent there, but they don't really have that, I feel like, a leader or someone who can really carry them and be that emotional person that can, who's been there. And I think there might be an opportunity there to create an opportunity for a trade. And I ran a couple of different scenarios, but a lot of it depends on, you know, where Denver might want to go. But I think, you know, if you could figure out how to get, you know, maybe with the mix they have, get a, you know, someone like a Gallinari, you would probably have to package a deal with maybe a Gallinari and a JaVale McGee type of thing. If they didn't think JaVale was going to pan out, that might be a mix that you could probably play with a little bit. You could look at something that might be, you know, maybe a Gallinari, Chandler, and Fareed kind of mixture that you could come back. But I think Denver's a team that in the West has some talent, but they need leadership. So I think if they can find a team that's similar to that makeup where they could get some pieces back with some of the young pieces that they have, because I think the young guys they have with – I think you keep KG because of the way in which I think he can mentor around leadership, and he's still productive. I think that could be great. And the young pieces like Sullinger, those are guys that can grow into – taking those kind of leadership positions, especially as a Rondo might come back. So, I think that you could probably do something in between. But I think if you're going to look at it, I would keep KG if you could because of what he could help you do in the transition and look to maybe move Pierce.
Okay. So you're thinking, you know, trade Paul Pierce, get some more young pieces back to fill in some of those, because they do have some spots where they're lacking, you know, in the size department. Usually they're a pretty good, pretty big team. They've had some pretty good size in the past, and right now they don't have somebody to really play that five spot and allow KG to play some four. KG has been very effective at the five, but, you know, I think they haven't been able to fully utilize his versatility because they don't have a solid big to plug into that spot. So, you know, you're thinking about bringing back a big and bringing back a shooter. That's a pretty big move to get rid of a guy like Paul Pierce.
Yeah.
Now, politically, how is Danny Ainge selling that, Wills? You know, you're getting rid of a Celtic great. And Boston is a different type of place as far as how they treat their greats. You know what I mean? And they don't trade off guys at the end of their career who've given a whole lot. They let them retire a Celtic. How are you spending that if you're Danny Ainge to the Boston public?
Well, I think part of it is because he's Danny Ainge, in the sense that he is part of that Celtic fabric. So I think that's part of his political cover. He's also not been afraid to be bold, and they've weathered him even with some of the criticism. They've weathered him, and I think it's a tough thing to do, but I don't think Boston's the kind of city that will allow, you can't really cycle out. Boston's like LA. They're not the kind of place that's going to let you drop and then try to rebuild in the lottery. The fans just don't put up with it that way. So you got to have a plan that allows for you to be competitive, drop, because I think they have pieces on their team that can do what Paul Pierce does if they have the right pieces coming back. I don't think they have anybody right now that can fill the void of a, you know, if you were to move a Rondo or if you were to move a KG. But I think they got some young pieces if they got room to grow and build along with Doc. And I think part of the sell has to be, having Doc in there, being part of the sell. And it's got to be a united front. And I think if you move Paul to a space where he has an opportunity to win, you know, there's some things that go with that. But I think, you know, if you want to be great, you got to make these tough decisions. But I think they, between the coach and the GM, they have the kind of people who could weather that.
Yeah, and, you know, I think moving Pierce is going to be hard, even still. Even if you can't spend it politically, I think moving Pierce is going to be hard. I just don't think that the market for him
is what's moving him. You know, I don't think you're going to get back enough to really justify moving him. With KD, again, I don't think there's a huge market for moving him. Plus, he has a no-trade clause. He's one of a handful of players who have a no-trade clause. I'm in the same boat as far as how I view it. I'm in the same boat as Phil T. I think you ride it out. I think when you think about the young core that they have in place, when you talk about Jeff Green, who's still 25, 26 years old, still fairly young player, still has about 3 or 4 more years left of being becoming a solid player and being an impact player to an extent. He was better younger because he was getting more minutes. I think if his minutes increase, you see his impact on the game increase a little bit. Just because he has a real laid-back personality. He's been that way. He's a Hoya. I'm a Georgetown fan, so I followed him since he was a pup. And he's kind of always had that laid-back persona about himself as a ball player. A guy like Avery Bradley, one of the best young perimeter defenders in the league. And then you got Sully, Jared Sullinger, a very solid young big. And then quiet as Fab Melo may develop into something. I'm not hedging my bets on that one. They've done things with young bigs. You know, they took raw Kendrick Perkins and turned him into what they needed him to be and what they needed him to be for that system, and they molded him and they developed him and they stuck with him. They had a young Al Jefferson, and they developed him and turned him into a nice young big man, all under Ainge and Doc Rivers' watch. So they've done this before, taking a raw guy and worked him out and turned him into a productive NBA big. And they may be able to do the same thing with Fab Melo. We'll see. But those four guys, when you talk about Sullinger, Green, Bradley, and Rondo, I think make up a very high IQ nucleus. All four of those guys have very high basketball IQs and can really play some ball and are really solid players. So I think Danny Ainge has got to ride it out. He's got four guys in place who he can work with. If anything, let Garnett and Pierce retire and use that money to go after someone and bring in someone else into the fold.
Well, but the thing about, you're going to have to look at it. So let's say, you're looking at Paul Pierce, he has 2 years. What if he decides he's not going to retire? So you got Bradley with 2 years, you got Paul Pierce with 2 years. You're going to end up making this move. If Paul Pierce doesn't want to retire, you end up making that move anyway.
Yes, but at that point, you know what you have in Bradley, and I think, go ahead. But
you can still justify that, and this is why I'm playing it. You can justify it just on he had 2 years left on the deal. You can justify on that. Also, you got to figure out how to play Bradley, and you'll have time because with Rondo going, people want you to go after it. But if you don't make it to the finals, they're not going to blame you on that. So you got a chance to see what extended minutes does for Bradley and some of these other players. You still got the vets around to make a run, and you don't know what's going to happen with some of these guys when you give them some breathing room. So that was my only
thing. And I agree with you. That's what the fans are going to want. That's what the fans are going to want. But, again, you see what's happening in L.A. The fans wanted Dwight Howard. The fans want big names. The management gave them big names. It ain't working. Sometimes you have to take a step back and play long ball. You got to play chess instead of checkers. And you got to say, you know what? In the long run, whatever we get from Paul now and supposedly making a run is probably not going to really get us there. It's not going to get us over the top. If you're talking about JaVale McGee and Danilo Gallinari, guys like that, those kind of mid-level guys, unless you get the right guys, you are not putting your team, because they still don't have a closer. They still wouldn't have a guy they can get the ball to late in the game to beat Miami, and they still don't necessarily have a post presence. Because JaVale McGee is an athletic guy, but he's still not a dump to it. Like, you know, we talked about Blake and DeAndre Jordan. They're both more advanced than JaVale as far as where they are being back-to-the-basket post-up players. Right now, JaVale McGee is where DeAndre Jordan was about 6 months ago as far as being an oop catcher, being a put-back guy. So it would really – you would have to give me some good names as to – you would have to sell me on who they're getting back. Because you're right, there's a deal out there that could be made that would get back somebody who might justify moving a Paul Pierce type. I agree with you
on
that.
But what I'm saying is, with your point about the closer, I think the closers in some developing closers in some of these young guys they got.
Whereas I don't think any of those guys are closers. I don't think any of those guys that have the closer DNA. Jeff Green has never been an assertive kind of cat. Rondo can't shoot throws at the end. Bradley is. I don't think Bradley's going to develop into. I think Bradley's a high level. I think they got high level role player type. Sullinger, a high level role player type. High IQ guys who, if you put them in around a stud, they're going to be great upper echelon, upper tier role players for sure. But I don't think they have a lead dog in that bunch, which is not a bad, not a diss on those four guys. I think they're going to. I think they have the potential to be really good players around the right group, around a lead dog. And Rondo is the same way. I mean, around the right kind of guys, he's perfect. I think you get the wrong kind of guy in there, and he and Rondo can clash.
But my thing is, then you're in purgatory, because you're not going to – there's no way you – unless you don't believe – unless that lead dog's not in that group, I'm trying to figure out a scenario – where you actually – then you have to either do it through free agency, or you have to be bad enough to be high enough to the lottery to get a lead dog.
You got to do it through free agency if you're Boston, because you're that organization.
Yeah.
You have that cash. You're not Milwaukee. You're not Memphis. You're not Charlotte. You don't have to go into the draft. You can still be a decent team because you need one more piece. And if you're a 43 and, you know, what – a 43-win squad, you can bring in that piece through free agency when Garnett's deal is up and that money frees up, and Paul Pierce's deal is up and that money frees up, and you got those four guys still in tow, you can probably lure somebody in and say, look, we will surround you with four probably the best role players we got in the league, and this will be your supporting cast, ready-made. I'd rather be in their situation than in the Lakers' shoes.
Oh yeah, by far. Yeah, I think
went
you're
all
right.
In.
You're basically saying throwing the water out the boat for the next 3 years.
Pretty much, and that's sometimes what you have to do. And again, fans don't like to hear that. No. But as management, those are the tough decisions that you have to make.
Doc better learn the backstroke.
Doc might be gone. But I want to transition, man. We got to, you know, this is a big week in sports, Super Bowl week. You know, a lot going on. So I'm gonna throw it to my man PhD, and he's gonna get us going on some football talk.
Yeah, Super Bowl week. No need for more of an introduction. We got Luke Hoover here from RotoWire.com. Luke, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. Getting really excited for I think it's going to be one of the more memorable Super Bowls. So, a lot
now,
of storylines, a lot of really good stuff.
Now, Luke, Merry Christmas. I'm not going to bring up anything about your Irish
okay.
Merry Christmas. Send me a gift in the mail.
I appreciate that. I'll make sure to get you this next year for sure.
But I will sidetrack for a second before we get to the Super Bowl. I've got to thank Luke on national radio to thank him for getting me two fantasy football championships. I cheated a little bit. I called in Luke from RotoWire a couple of nights before the championship week and sent him a 7-page letter, as Aaliyah would say, with my roster, and you came through for me, man. I won two of my leagues, so thank you so much.
That's awesome, man. No problem. I'm glad you won. You know, I don't know how much I helped. I know the decisions were yours. I'm glad you won, though.
So before we get into the actual game, let's talk about some of these storylines coming in. We got the Harbaughs. We got Ray Lewis. We've got Ed Reed making it to the Super Bowl. What's one of the biggest storylines that has you interested the most?
To me, the Harbaugh versus Harbaugh, it's really intriguing. It's really an awesome storyline. But my favorite, you know, is a player that I've watched and really enjoyed watching throughout his career. You know, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, is Lewis going out. But not just that Lewis is going out and he's doing it in the Super Bowl, but that he's going to be, you know, playing against a guy that looks like the heir apparent, Patrick Willis, certainly. The guy took number 52 because he's a big Ray Lewis fan, hits like him, plays like him. You know, he's been an all-pro every year in the league. And I think Patrick Willis is definitely going to hold that mantle pretty well for Ray Lewis. I actually look for Lewis to outplay Willis a little bit in the game. But I think it's almost going to be out of necessity more than anything, because I think Lewis is going to be on the field a little bit more. I expect San Fran to run the ball a little more, and certainly up the gut where Ray Lewis is going to make a lot of tackles and be in a lot of plays. But at the same time, I mentioned Patrick Willis as that next guy. You know, well, he's 1A right now in the league as far as the next best middle linebacker, inside linebacker. Well, his teammate, Navarro Bowman, is really close and probably 1B to Willis. You know, some people even will say Bowman might be better. His coverage skills are a little stronger. He's a little faster sideline to sideline. You know, certainly wraps up and tackles a lot. So that's definitely a really intriguing, you know, storyline to me, to see the linebacker play on both sides of the ball.
Ray Lewis and Patrick Willis. If you are a GM and you can pick one of those two players and they're playing at the peak of their game, which one would you pick?
You know, just I have to say Lewis. You see what he's done over the years. You know, the only guy in league history, I think it's 40 picks, 40-plus picks and 30-plus sacks or vice versa. I can't recall exactly. But you know, the guy's just been an animal. I think I'd take Lewis over Willis for one factor, though. It's the leadership quality, and I'm not saying Willis doesn't have it, but Lewis has that vocalness about him. He's that team leader, the locker room guy, and that major presence, you know, on the field with his voice. Willis certainly is a leader, and he does it, you know, through his play, but I don't think he's quite brings that same thing to the locker room that Lewis does as far as speaking up, you know, and taking control of the locker room.
Running backs, Frank Gore and Rice for Baltimore. Talk a little bit about those guys and how they can impact the game.
They're huge in this game because whichever team is going to run the ball better is probably going to, you know, I think both offenses will want to have a play kind of a ball control style of offense in this game because, you know, the two defenses are really tough, really physical. I don't think they're going to give up a lot of big plays. Whoever holds on to that ball more and can run it more, you know, stays on the field longer is going to have a better chance to score, you know, score touchdowns and get all the way down the field. You know, to me, I think Frank Gore outplays Ray Rice in this game. Because of that, you know, the dynamic that the pistol offense brings, you know, it opens up that middle of the defense a little bit more. Baltimore, as tough as they played in the playoffs, they're still a little bit softer. They're going to give up a little more, you know, yards per carry up front and in the middle where, you know, the Niners like to attack with Gore. Ray Rice, he's kind of hit or miss. He's actually had some pretty down games this year. Wasn't one of his best seasons. And that Niners defense, you know, they're stout at the point of attack. They got good size. Justin Smith's an animal up front. And like we'd already mentioned, you know, they don't have one Ray Lewis. They got two. So, you know, those two guys are going to be tackling machines. And they're going to make it really tough for Rice to get, you know, the consistent yards per carry he's going to need to keep chains moving, which I think puts more pressure on Joe Flacco's arm. So I like Gore a little bit more in this game. Now, if Rice factors in the passing game, the way he's capable of, though, that could completely change the dynamic and change things for Baltimore, you know, and help them to kind of set up big plays. You know, Rice is that type of guy. He could have 70, 80 receiving yards, and he could have a 30 or 40-yard catch. So it's a bit of a coin flip because they're amazing, talently talented backs, and they're both very versatile. But I think Gore is going to be more effective on the ground.
Yeah, in a game with two teams that don't have a ton of game changers, it really just confounds me sometimes when Baltimore does not get the ball to Ray Rice more. I mean, I've got to think that they've got to be building him into the game plan a lot more than they have throughout the season.
I certainly hope so because you can see when they do the effect that it has. Look what he did in the Denver game in the divisional round before they played New England. Rice had about 30 carries in that game, I think, and he had, you know, well over 100 yards, had a score, and he was a huge impact down the stretch. But where I think Baltimore might be able to find some success running the ball is Bernard Pierce gives them a really good change of pace, and he's run it very effectively. Certainly in the last, you know, 3-4 games of the regular season, he's done well in the playoffs as well. He's a little thicker and a little bigger than Rice. You know, so he's going to be that guy who can break some tackles, and maybe they use him to soften the D a little bit, keep Rice fresh for, you know, for those third downs, catching the ball out of the backfield, and getting him those extra touches that you're not necessarily going to give him if you're handing off the whole game. And at the same time, you know, they're both such dynamic running offenses. You got Michael James for the 49ers who, you know, is a nice complement to Gore as well with his speed on the outside.
I'll let you fill in the blank here, Luke. If Baltimore does blank, they'll be really tough to beat on Sunday.
If Baltimore can control the line of scrimmage on offense, because I think that's where they're going to, you know, struggle the most is to convert third downs. And I think actually, you know, really underrated statistics that's going to come into play in this Super Bowl is field position and how many times the punter for the 49ers is probably one of the best punters in the league, pinned teams inside the 20. You know, if Baltimore's going to have to drive the ball 80-plus yards to get points, they've got to be able to get a good push up front. A guy like Marshall Yanda, to me, is one of the key players for Baltimore. You know, he's a great, you know, all-pro caliber guard. And if he can create running lanes, you know, up the middle for guys like Rice and Pierce, if they can protect Flacco long enough so that he's able to, you know, find, like we said, I don't think there's going to be a lot of big plays. He's going to have to convert some checkdowns, you know, find the soft spots in the defense, get guys like Dennis Pitta and Anquan Boldin the ball on third downs.
Is Flacco a franchise quarterback?
I'd say he's proved that so far in the playoffs. I mean, just in every year in the playoffs, he's really steps his game up. You know, he has erratic moments during the regular season, but he's had some really big playoff games.
You know, there's a something about Flacco that doesn't feel like a franchise quarterback. But here's the thing. If he wins on Sunday, all of a sudden that feeling changes, and he is elite and he's a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It changes everything. You win one of the rings, you know. I mean, how many Super Bowl quarterbacks can you look back through history and say that guy wasn't a franchise quarterback?
Right.
I can think of the last Ravens quarterback to win it, maybe. You know, Trent Dilfer didn't have a lot of success throughout his career, but, you know, he did win some games. And maybe Brad Johnson, you know, with Tampa Bay. I can't think of too many, though.
So San Francisco, this is one of the first times in their franchise history they're going to be entering the Super Bowl without being a favorite. And with it being such a closely matched Super Bowl, fill in the blank again. If San Francisco does blank, they'll be really tough to beat on Sunday.
I would not even say San Francisco. I'd say if Colin Kaepernick plays his game, the way he's played in the playoffs, the way he's played since he's taken over as a starter, if the Ravens defense, you know, rather can't control Kaepernick from getting what he wants as far as, you know, his runs on the outside, you know, finding those throwing lanes. You know, I just think Kaepernick's the key to this game for San Francisco. I mean, and it's obviously pretty, you know, pretty blatant and obvious to everybody else. It's kind of an understatement to say that. But if he can do what he's done so far, just play his game and get what he wants, they're going to win that game.
So Kaepernick is a really interesting guy for me. I was telling one of my buddies earlier that I think that he gets injured and Alex Smith has to step in and play. If that happens, you think they win?
I don't give him much of a shot of winning, although Smith is certainly a talented quarterback. You know, he had him right there last year. I think they play that game. I believe San Francisco beats New England last year. But at the same time, you look back to the Ravens 49ers game last year. See, because they played last year on Thanksgiving, you really can't compare, though, because Kaepernick wasn't in that game. Alex Smith
right.
took 9 sacks. He doesn't have he's a mobile quarterback, but nowhere near like Kaepernick is, and he doesn't quite get rid of it quickly enough sometimes. I mean, in that game in particular, they didn't have the same receiving core necessarily. Randy Moss wasn't there. Crabtree was not playing anywhere near to the level he is currently, but I think they have a really difficult time with Alex Smith because it also is going to hurt the run game. Frank Gore didn't do a lot last year when these teams met, and it's probably in large part, you know, because they didn't have this extra dynamic, the read option. I think that opens things up a lot for Gore. Alex Smith, you know, obviously doesn't present that.
You listen to The Real Sports Guys. We're here live with Luke Hoover of rotowire.com. You can check Luke on Twitter at Hoover_L_A. So let's talk about San Francisco's receivers. And before I go into that, I got to ask you, earlier today, Randy Moss said that he was the best receiver of all time. I'll ask you, is Randy Moss a top 5 receiver of all time?
Top 5, he's without a doubt a top 5 all time. I'd actually be hard-pressed to not say he's in that, you know, he's either 2 or 3. The guy's, you know, done some incredible things. Probably one of, if not the biggest or best big play receiver of all time, obviously. You know, he has the touchdowns to back that up, a lot of deep balls. His statement that he's the best, though, I mean, I think everybody's going to agree. I love the confidence. Everyone's going to agree, though, it's Jerry Rice. I mean, it's the last 49er to dominate and, you know, win Super Bowls. So.
I mean, I tend to agree with Randy because while Jerry Rice had the ability for the big play, he was primarily, in my opinion, a possession receiver. And oftentimes we use the term possession as a downward for receivers. But when you look at Randy, look at how much he influenced guys that played across of him. You know, Welker. And Randy took the top off of defenses. Even in games he only had one or two catches, he still had a huge impact to the game. So, you know, I am a Randy Moss guy. I'm going to go with Randy on this one.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you might be the first person I've heard say that today. But you know what? I'll be very honest. I don't watch a great deal of media day.
Yeah.
You know, I don't. I didn't get an opportunity to see that in years past. I have more so, but I'm a little surprised about it. I got to admit.
I throw one in every now and again. The fellas will tell you. let's talk about the receivers a little bit here. We got Crabtree on one side and Bolden on the other side. Bolden really impressed me in the AFC Championship. He made two really impressive grabs in the end zone during the AFC Championship game. Looked like he was back in Arizona. Talk about these two guys and how they can impact the game.
You know, I think they're going to have a huge impact in the game. I can't drive it home enough. I really do think there's going to be a limited number of big plays in this game. Neither of the defenses really allowed explosive plays throughout the season. Actually, San Francisco was tied for, you know, having the shortest long throw. The longest throw they gave up all year was 53 yards, and that was actually to Michael Floyd in Week 17, you know, to the Cardinals without even a quarterback. So I don't expect a lot of big plays. These two guys are going to be crucial to their teams because to convert those third downs, these are the guys, you know, that are running those routes across the middle. These are the guys you're looking to in the quick slants, and they're the two players on their teams with the best hands. You know, Bolden and Crabtree both have extremely strong hands. I should say, you know, Crabtree might not be there yet because Randy Moss, like you said, is still there. But Bolden made phenomenal catches in the playoffs. The guy wants it, you can tell. You know, he's been in the league a long time. He's a very strong, you know, proud receiver, and he's going to come out to make some plays. So I think it's going to be – the offenses are going to come down to, you know, which one of these two receivers makes more plays, which, you know, the two running backs can make more plays. Those teams are going to move the ball more. I actually really like Crabtree to be a difference maker in this game. He's been phenomenal in the second half of the season. He, you know, since Kaepernick's taken over, he had a slow start with him, but once the two got a rhythm together, he's been the clear go-to guy for Kaepernick, and he's kind of lit it up. You know, several two-touchdown games. He did that against the Packers in the first their first playoff matchup. And he's just a very talented guy, particularly after the catch.
All right, let's pay some bills. We'll be back in 45 seconds with Luke Hoover with RotoWire.com.
Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the Real Sports Guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
All right, we're here with Luke Hoover from RotoWire.com. Luke, this is Devon Wilson, and just wanted to ask you a little bit about, they've been talking about, you know, whether or not Kaepernick is the next generation of quarterback or a gimmick or just a trend that's short-lived. As you've been kind of watching this season and evolving with the spread offense and different things, what's your opinion about where we're going in terms of quarterback play?
I don't I don't know that it's necessarily going to become a huge trend because these guys, you know, there are some special athletes in the league right now. You know, Kaepernick's certainly one of the leaders there in RG3. You know, guys like Cam Newton and Russell Wilson, they provide that extra, you know, dynamic with their legs and their ability to, you know, break off a long run and play that read option style. I don't know that it'll become a trend because there's just not that many that are that talented of runners and passers. And I think a reason that Kaepernick's going to continue to be a star and he's going to thrive, regardless of, you know, how much they continue running this read option, is because the guy throws a fantastic football. I mean, he's got great accuracy. He has tremendous arm, you know, as far as his strength and velocity, so he can put it into tight windows. And he's reading the field better with each game. You could see that. You know, he threw the ball really well against Atlanta, and he found the open man very quickly when he needed to. And, you know, I think this is his ninth start or tenth start, this, you know, in the Super Bowl. The guy's only, you know, going to keep getting better as far as passing the ball. So I like Kaepernick's upside. It's tremendous. He's going to be one of the top quarterbacks in this league for a little while here, you know, until defenses kind of figure out how to game plan and stop him better. But at that same time, they build up that receiving core in San Francisco. He's still going to have success with his arm.
It's interesting because you're one of the few people, and I'm glad you said that, that really have acknowledged his accuracy, and particularly downfield. I mean, throwing some of the outs and some of the more difficult passes, he's throwing them on a rope, and his arm strength and accuracy. I've been saying that has as much to do with his success as anything because he hasn't been getting hit as much as an RG3 and other quarterbacks you've seen run this. I think it has a lot to do with how accurate he's been downfield. So it's good that you don't hear a lot of people talking about, I think, often enough his accuracy as a passer.
Yeah, and you know what? You have to imagine he's going to keep improving that. I mean, one of the things that I like about him, you know, as well is he's RG3 is, I think, like 6'2". Kaepernick's 6'5", so that, you know, it's easier for him to find those windows, you know, staying either in the pocket or when he moves, you know, side to side and he's rolling out. He can throw over the top of a defender who's running right alongside him. You know, he has a little bit of a weird trajectory as well, so he can kind of throw around guys sometimes. You know, you've seen him do that on a few rollouts. But kid's a special player, and I don't think he gets enough credit for not just the poise, but his, you know, his intelligence on the field and the smarts. Like you said, he doesn't take the hits. Well, he knows when to slide, and he knows when to get out of bounds.
Before I hand this back to Phil, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about the two coaches, as you look at both of these teams, are there anything that even though they're brothers, 15 months apart, are there any differences that you see with a John Harbaugh coach team versus a Jim Harbaugh coach team when you look at these two teams?
Really almost very few differences, actually. They both are kind of like throwback old school coaches. They want, you know, they want their teams to, you know, hit the other team in the mouth, be really physical with them, and they're that way on both sides of the ball. You know, so they both run with the fullback. You know, they'll both go to tight ends and just be really physical and aggressive. They'll throw that extra lineman in on offense. You know, they have those big, strong linebackers. They're running 3-4 defenses. They really like to get after the quarterback. You know, like to hit the running back. And, you know, I think they're very similar in that regard. But, you know, one other thing you also see, their players have the absolute utmost respect for them. You know, they listen to them. And there's a lot of leaders on both sides, both teams. You can see that, too, as well. I think that comes down from the head coach, you know, as far as instilling the leadership in, you know, some of your players and having those guys, you know, run the team just like you would.
Okay.
You listen to Luke Hoover here with the Real Sports Guys. Luke is, you can catch Luke on RotoWire.com. Now, Luke, you mentioned both these teams use fullbacks. Now, that is a throwback. We talk about sometimes how in the NBA the center position is going to become obsolete, kind of like the NFL fullback, how the fullback was in the 70s and 60s and 50s. What does that say about these teams that they use a fullback, they use tight ends, and what does that say about how exciting this game is going to be?
All right. Well, it means this game is going to be awfully hard-hitting, which I particularly enjoy. And I think, you know, actually that's another point I was thinking about as an interesting storyline. You know, the 49ers, they're not using the fullback quite as much. They've got a pretty good one, Bruce Miller. He's been effective. But, you know, the Ravens have a guy named Vonta Leach who's been an all-pro a number of years and is just an absolute truck who looks to headhunt linebackers. So I'm really interested to see how he does, you know, versus both Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman, you know, and trying to open up those holes for Ray Rice and seeing how heavily he's involved. You know, Baltimore likes to use him a lot. It's definitely, you know, indicates that these guys play with that style, the coaches rather, that it is going to be a hard-hitting game. It's going to be really physical. And, it's going to be that cliche, but, you know, a game of inches, because you're going to have to fight from scratch for absolutely every one of them in this game.
Now, before we get your prediction, I want to ask you a couple of questions and step away a little bit from the Super Bowl. Let's talk about the Pro Bowl. I watched about 15 minutes of the Pro Bowl, and I have to say, Luke, it was a little bit better than it was last year. Perhaps Peyton Manning's pep speech to the troops helped out a little bit. But what are your thoughts of the Pro Bowl and what needs to happen to move forward?
I would definitely, you know, I'm a fan as far as I'd like to keep it. I because I like that, you know, you're rewarding some of the guys that worked so hard throughout the season, some of the better players in the league. I actually preferred the Pro Bowl when it was after the Super Bowl. I think it's a shame that, some of these stars that play in the Super Bowl don't get a chance to make that trip, you know, and have that camaraderie with the other guys in the league that are fellow Pro Bowlers. You know, you look at so many 49ers and Ravens are voted the Pro Bowl. They don't even get to participate. I think that's a shame. You know, as far as what to do with it to keep it around, I do think, you know, especially if you're going to keep it the week before the Super Bowl, it definitely helps to have it in the same city. I think it'll bring a little bit more attention and put more fans there. Maybe you could try to come up with a better incentive for the players. I'm not quite sure what the dollar figures are as far as, you know, the winner and the loser, what they're getting for playing in that game. But, you know, if it was a bigger incentive or there was, you know, some bigger prize for these guys, the bottom line is they want to protect themselves. So you're never going to be able to have it be that competitive a game. You want to just try to keep it entertaining. I liked what they did this year, you know, with the AFC putting J.J. Watt out and trying to throw some passes to him. I thought that was really interesting. You know, and stuff like that. Maybe doing some things that you don't just get to see during the season. Something along those lines, a few extra trick plays, things of that nature. But it's going to be hard. It's going to be tough for them to keep that alive.
Yeah, it's a tough problem. It is. There's no 100% solution here. And part of my attraction to the Super Bowl, I'm just going to step out here on a limb here, is Tecmo Bowl. I remember playing Tecmo Bowl back in the day, and you could do the Pro Bowl. And one of the last Super Tecmo Bowls. And that's when you can kind of set up your roster with different players. Now, Luke, the giggle told me you know a little bit about Tecmo Bowl. Is that accurate?
I've been playing regular Nintendo my entire life. So, yeah, I've played plenty of Tecmo Bowl.
All right, again, we're getting a little bit far away from the Super Bowl here, but I got to ask you, who is your favorite, one more time, favorite Tecmo Bowl team of all time? Now, for me, Luke, it was the 92-93 Bills. And the game changer is back in the back room shaking his head. That team had Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed, and you could not block Bruce Smith. Who was your favorite team on all the Tecmo Bowls?
Well, to me, it was a team that's about to win a Super Bowl, because being a Notre Dame guy, I had to play with Joe Montana, and it was impossible to stop Montana to Rice. Yeah, John Taylor, you know, Roger Craig, Charles Haley, Ronnie Lott, probably the second fastest defensive player in that game besides, like, a Lawrence Taylor. So it was a lot of fun, playing with that San Francisco team. And those, you know, you're talking about one of the greatest teams in history, top two or three easily, if not the best, so.
You listen to Real Sports Guys on realsportsguys.com. We're talking Tecmo Bowl here with Luke Hoover from rotowire.com. You can catch Luke on Twitter at @Hoover_L_A. So Luke, I got to stay with the Tecmo Bowl for one more question. So you brought up Roger Craig. If you could take Roger Craig or Frank Gore in this game on Sunday, who would you take?
Yeah. That's actually a pretty difficult one because, to me, Roger Craig's the guy that belongs in the Hall of Fame. You know, the first guy to have 1,000 and 1,000, you know, receiving and rushing yards in the same season. And he was a big-game guy. He had some pretty darn nice Super Bowls. You know, that one against, yeah, I guess the Dolphins comes to mind. I might be mistaken. But, you know, Roger Craig is a special player. Still, though, I would take Frank Gore because right now what I know is that Frank Gore can play in the pistol offense, and I know that's what San Fran's going to run on Sunday.
So coming back to Flacco again, does Flacco deserve Manning money?
No. I mean, I think he's a special player, but he's a good player and he's a winner. I like that about Joe Flacco a lot. You know, I've also thought he gets a little bit, you know, of a tough time because he has some inconsistencies. But look at the players around him. Torrey Smith's a very good deep threat and good talent. He's just in the second season. They just brought Anquan Boldin in. I can't recall if it was Flacco's second or third year. Mm-hmm. So they really haven't had that great of receivers for him to throw the ball to. So I think they do need to deepen that receiver core and add a little bit more talent to it. And Dennis Pitt is a good tight end as well, so he's got weapons this year. But Manning money is reserved for maybe three guys in the league. And Joe Flacco's just not there yet.
That's,
you know, Aaron Rodgers deserves Manning money. You know, obviously Tom Brady, Drew Brees, these guys. I can't think of another quarterback I'd give that kind of money to.
So we've been all over the map. We're going to come back to the Super Bowl here. But, I mean, Tecmo Bowl is just something I have to go to in just about every interview I have. So, Luke, let's talk about some X factors you have on each team here for Sunday.
Sure. There's a lot of them because there's a lot of really good players on both sides of the ball. You know, in this game, we've mentioned a number of them already, you know, Kaepernick and Flacco, the two quarterbacks. They've got to be the top X factors for each team. But, you know, those are the guys. When you talk X factors, I'm thinking a guy like Terrell Suggs, you know, who hasn't, you know, had near the year that he had last year. He was the defensive player of the year. But, he came in late, and he really just he hasn't played up to his ability yet because of, you know, the injury he's coming off of. But if he can have anywhere close to the game he had against Denver, you know, he had 10 stops, 10 tackles, and he had 2 sacks of Peyton Manning. And if he can get that type of pressure on Kaepernick and also contain him from getting outside of the pocket, I think he could have a huge impact on this game. He's the type of player that is going to be, you know, coming to play, obviously, a big game type of guy. And I think he's crucial because of that pistol offense, not just about making the big plays, but for Suggs, he's got to be really disciplined. If he can keep Kaepernick contained, you know, put pressure on him but without letting him outside, he's going to be a big-time difference maker on the defense. And another name on the Baltimore defense I'm really watching closely is Haloti Ngata. He's a monster up front, and the Niners want to run it right at you and run down your throat. You know, if he can fend off that gigantic 49ers line and he can, you know, win at the point of attack, he's going to really give him a tough time of doing that. So Frank Gore is going to have to, you know, be going to the outside a little bit more than he's comfortable with and more than the 49ers would like for him to. And that could really slow down the rushing attack for San Fran. You know, again, on the Niners' defensive side of the ball, just like Terrell Suggs, you know, a guy who's got a good pressure off the edge, Alvin Smith has to come to play. I don't think he has a sack in the playoffs so far. I actually didn't check, to be honest with you. But, you know, the guy had 19 and a half in the regular season. And when he's on, you know, he can create havoc for, you know, the quarterback. Joe Flacco has been tremendous in this playoffs. He doesn't have a pick. Alden Smith needs to either get him on the ground or force him to making some bad decisions. You know, he's a guy that could certainly be a huge difference maker in this game. And a guy that, you know, is probably not going to get a ton talked about before the game, but could be the guy you're talking about a ton after the game for the San Fran is David Akers.
Yeah,
that guy has got to make some field goals. So he is definitely an X-factor guy to me.
He has been inconsistent this year.
He's been kind of embarrassing to San Francisco, to be honest. I don't know. I'm still kind of surprised they've kept him along. But you're talking about a guy who kicked the most field goals in any one season in league history just a year ago. So I think they still believe he can come through when it matters. And I certainly hope if it comes down to it for San Francisco, that doesn't bite him. But I think this is going to be a game that, you know, one or two field goals either way could decide it. David Akers has got to be clutch. He's got to make those field goals. He can't be hitting the post. You know, he can't be It's gotta be mental to me at this point. I don't understand it because the guy's been a great kicker his whole career. Excuse me, but you know, just had it such a bad year. He's been in the Super Bowl before, so he's one of the few guys, you know, who's been on this stage, and he's got to come through for San Fran.
All right, Luke. The last 25 minutes has led us to this point.
I want winners.
Who you got for the game on Sunday?
You know what? To me, I don't know how they're not favored. I just think San Francisco's too powerful. I've got San Fran winning. I'll even give you a final score. I got it
30-23.
I think it's going to be a touchdown difference.
Well, Luke, we appreciate you coming on. Luke Hoover from rotowire.com. Again, you can catch Luke on Twitter at @Hoover_L_A. Luke, we worked you out for the last 25 minutes. We appreciate you.
I'm a little out of breath.
All right, back to the game changer.
All right, man, excellent interview. Again, thank you to Luke Hoover from rotowire.com for joining us. D. Wills, my man. Man, there's a lot to cover. And PhD touched on a lot of things. I'm going to try and run through it, and we can kind of weigh in on some of the points that PhD hit with Luke. One of the first things I want to talk about is the Joe Flacco conundrum. You know, Joe is going to get his money. The question is he worth his money? You know, sometimes getting to a Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl is all you need to put yourself in that category. I mean, look at Eli. People had a lot of questions about Eli. I think Eli was in a similar position to Joe, to Flacco, until he won that first Super Bowl. Getting that first Super Bowl really put him in a position where, you know, he was viewed differently by everyone. And getting the second cemented kind of who he was and his place amongst elite quarterbacks. Joe Flacco was on the precipice of doing the same for himself. But as my man PhD coined, the $9.99 question is Flacco worth the money?
Wow. And folks who have probably been listening for a while know that I have been very critical of Joe Flacco. But in recent weeks, I have named him as a dog of the week selection. I'm using an analogy that Ray would use. I'm using Ray. Ray, I hope you're recovering well. We look forward to getting you back on the air. But Ray often talks about the difference between camp kids and playground kids. If you're a basketball person, you know that a playground kid is a little bit different. Playground kid will cut you for the victory. Game point might take 10 minutes, but they're ready to battle. Camp kid, conditions are always good. They play indoors a lot. They don't have to deal with the wind. And so it's kind of clean. And I've always, I think my problem with Flacco is it always felt like he was a camp kid. Versus Brady is like Brady's a playground kid. Going to scrap, going to cut you. I think that's one of the issues that Manny has. I think Manny's kind of this camp kid. You know, he's won because he's been very talented, but, you know, that cutthroatness. And so do you pay him? You know, I think they're going to have to pay him because he's made enough plays for you to pay him, and the quarterback position is so valuable. And he's demonstrated, you know, all you can do is evaluate what happens when the lights come on, and he's performing when the lights come on. And so, you know, to be fair with it, I think you got to pay him. Do you pay him Manny money? You're not going to pay him Manny money, but I think he's shown enough. He's made enough big plays. He's done it this playoff against some of the two of the top two players of a generation. You got to pay him. I figure out how to pay him without paying him Manny money.
Yeah, and that's the conundrum. That's why I call it a conundrum, because I truly believe it's a conundrum. Because when you want your quarterback to be able to win you a Super Bowl, that's ultimately what you want from your quarterback. Forget that. Forget numbers. Forget regular season numbers. You want your quarterback to put you in a position to play well enough to win you a Super Bowl. And he's done that. He's done that. He's put them in position to win a Super Bowl. But
I still don't know if I'm giving him $20 million for it.
Let me use another thing. And they've been describing this way. I think it's appropriate. So, and this will determine whether or not you get him. Right now, he's like a great boxer who knows how to win with the knockout punch, meaning that his greatest plays have been those plays downfield where he's going for those deep shots. And he has a good sense of timing when to throw those shots. So he's like a great boxer that has built up a lot of knockouts. And the question is, can he evolve into a boxer puncher, meaning that can he still take those deep shots when he needs to? But as the defense is going through transition, can he mature to a point where he can start to do some of the check down movement change and kind of mix it up? Can he change pace and tempo? And I think that's his next level of evolution, of staying, as you always say, of staying ahead of the scouting report. I think if you think he can do that, then I think he can get there.
But see, that's the problem. If I got to guess, if you're still evolving and you're still developing, I can't give you $20 million. I got to give $20 million to a finished product, to a guy who I know can do those things. I need to know you can do those things. I don't need to think. I need to know. That's just me, though.
Let me come back at you at this, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but I got to say it because PhD
right.
Yeah,
knows that.
For
me, I'm going to eat what I got to eat. If I got to eat crow, I'm going to eat it. That validates the other stuff I say, and I can't go away from the fact that if you evaluate him over the past 3 or 4 seasons, and you compare him to other quarterbacks. As that defense has been declining, he's been making big plays. There's more evidence of him performing, and if you start to put him up against these other quarterbacks, he's performed. I mean, he has more evidence of him putting on his shoulders and performing over the last 2 or 3 seasons than other quarterbacks. And so,
yeah,
you know, you have to, if you're looking at it like that, again, I think the problem is we see him, like I said, we see him as a camp kid. You don't see him like Brady. You don't see him like, you know, like he's going to shake somebody in the huddle. You know what I'm saying? You don't see that.
But see, and that's the thing. That's the thing that gives me pause. That's the thing that makes me take a step back, all right? The thing that makes me step back is that everything says you pay him. But something deep down inside of me says, don't pay that dude.
I know, man.
And I don't know what it is, but something deep down inside of me says, don't pay him. Like, I agree with you. All the evidence says he deserves the money. All the evidence says he deserves the money. But if I'm a part of the Ravens organization, I wish my defense was playing better. I wish we ran the ball more so I could have somebody else to give credit for these victories. So I could have an excuse not to pay this dude. Because it's like, God, we got to pay him. I mean, we got to pay him.
Yeah.
This dude ain't worth it, man. It's like paying Joe Johnson. When the Hawks gave Joe Johnson that big deal. It's like
that's
when the Bulls gave Carlos Boozer that money. It's like so I don't know. I think he deserves the money. I think he's earned the money.
I just, man.
I have a hard time paying him. PhD, how you feel about this, man? Flacco getting that money. What do you think?
Well, they have to pay him. They have to pay him. If not, it's a situation like Jerry Krause with the Bulls, and he didn't want to pay Pippen. You have to pay him because, A, you can't find anybody else out there right now who's going to be better than him in terms of the free agent pool and the draft. You just can't. And you can't have a disgruntled face of your organization not getting paid like he's the face of the organization. Now, the problem I have with it is, I mean, it's the same reason we don't look at Dan Marino or Charles Barkley as elite, elite Hall of Famers, because they never won. All of a sudden, if Flacco wins in 3 days or 4 days, whenever the Super Bowl is, Sunday, all of a sudden we look at him differently. We look at everything this cat does differently. When he gives an interview, oh, he's talking like an elite quarterback. So we got to pay him like an elite quarterback. And to some degree, just getting to the championship game, the Super Bowl game, he already has a little bit of that. So my problem is Joe Flacco's numbers, 22 touches, 10 interceptions, nothing screams elite franchise, pay him like Peyton Manning money. But at the end of the day, you still have to. You still have to. It's like the Roy Hibbert rule that I keep coming back to. There's a reason why coming out of Georgetown, we felt a lot better about Dikembe Mutombo than Roy Hibbert.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why we like Kevin Garnett 16 years in more than we do Roy Hibbert, and they're still putting up the same numbers. It just does not feel right. But at the end of the day, you got to pay him. You have no choice.
Yeah, yeah. I can't argue with it. I can't argue with it. We got a new RSG theory in the house. We got the Roy Hibbert rule. Now, PAD, you got to draft up the guidelines to the Roy Hibbert rule in a similar form to which I've drafted up the guidelines to the Luau Deng theory of offensive productivity.
No problem. It's guys that if they didn't look and perform a certain way, we feel a lot more better about them.
Yeah.
When Roy Hibbert made the All-Star game last year, it just didn't feel right when it came across ESPN's bottom line. We're like, okay, KG, okay, Rondo, okay. Hibbert, what? Yeah, I mean, you had to get online to look at Hibbert's numbers. You just did. It's like Anthony Mason making the All-Star team. You know, I mean, that's the theory. It just doesn't feel right.
Oh, man. You ain't lying, dog. You ain't lying. You're right. You're right. That explains it right there. All right? When a guy is getting accolades or he's getting a paycheck and you, something about it just doesn't vibe. You're spot on. You're spot on. Well played, man. Well played. All right. So flipping over to the other side of the Super Bowl coin, San Francisco, Colin Kaepernick, man. Cap, as they call him. This cat, man, he's playing well. He's making Harbaugh look super smart. I mean, he supplanted a quarterback who was leading the league in completion percentage. Not sure he was dinking and dunking, but he was getting the job done. They weren't struggling, but it was the right move. This kid is a burgeoning star, and he has him in position to really make some noise. Now, you asked Luke about whether or not this pistol, is it a gimmick? Is it the wildcat? Is it the running shoot? You know, is it the no huddle? Well, eventually teams are gonna figure it out, and you won't be able to run it exclusively. You're gonna have to run it in bits and pieces, in small packages, but it won't be your base offense. Is the pistol that? Is it a gimmick, PhD?
The jury's still out. It really is. I think the test will be the 2013 season when coaches have attended clinics. They have went to USC to see how they stop or try to stop Oregon's offense. When you have an entire offseason for teams to prepare, study, and try to find solutions for this offense. So I think it's a little bit too early to say, but the early returns is it looks pretty promising.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, defensive coordinators, man, you know, some of these problems we got in society, we might want to hand over to some football defensive coordinators for offseason. You know, national debt. Let them tackle that for a minute, man. They come back next season. Nah, you ain't going to run that play no more. You know what I'm saying? These bets, you know, the housing bubble, they could solve some of this stuff too, man. I think if you gave them some time, man, gave them some film.
Yeah.
You know, you see some defensive coordinators in the room sitting on the couch watching the film with bankers. Oh, you see that banker over there? That cat, you know.
Nick Saban will be one of the highest paid consultants this offseason for NFL teams. A lot of these college
Absolutely.
Coaches will be because they're gonna need to reach
Absolutely.
Out and figure out how do you stop this offense.
Yes. Yes. Yep. So I agree. I think we have to wait and see. You know, it's always, you know, when a quarterback, a first-time starter has that big year, that first year, it's always wait and see. You know, anytime you have a Derek Anderson, you know, some of those one-hit wonders, some of those guys will have a great season, and then you're like, okay, you know, it gets coming fantasy draft season next year, and I'm like, I'm going to hold off on that dude. I want to see if he can do this his second and for 2 years in a row. When defenses have had a whole offseason to go over and comb through, you know, each and every throw, each and every play, every scenario, each and every down and distance, you know, when they go through and comb over all of that, and if he's still successful, then I'm in on it. You know, so we'll have to see. Now we got to get down to the nitty gritty. It's go time for the go team. We got to make some predictions, fellas. We won't be back with the RSG fam, the RSG listeners, with the Renegades out there in the world until after the Super Bowl. So we got to get on tape. We got to get something on wax. D. Wills, I'm starting with you. Who would you take in the Super Bowl?
Well, you know, the Harbaugh family.
This is a bit of competing interest for you.
Yeah, this is a tough one, but I think what came to me was a conversation I had with one of John's former coaches, and I think people all around. They won't say around the family probably. What I would say is I probably would go for the Ravens. And the reason why, a couple of things. On a personal side, I think John's journey has been much longer underground, you know, starting out at, you know, Miami, Ohio, Morehead State, working his way up through the ranks. And also with the Ravens being in AFC in the North with the Steelers. You know, even though we're the rivals, you know, you want to represent the division. So I think I'm actually leaning towards the Ravens. I think it's going to be 27-24. I think this stuff around Ray Lewis, I think all it's done is fuel the Ravens.
Okay. So we got D. Wills, Ravens, 27-24. Over the San Francisco 49ers in Super Bowl 47. PhD was lit on the facts. Prediction. I need that.
I pride myself on lyrics. I pride myself on statistics. I pride myself on facts.
Sound like more information. Like you look yourself in the mirror and say that every morning.
I don't have facts to back this up.
That would be real.
With that being said, the Ravens win because my 11-year-old nephew said they would. And he lives in Baltimore, so I'm going with the Ravens. That's how close I think this matchup is. So I'm not even going to try to fake the funk. Young Ryan Conway, 11 years old, in Baltimore, Maryland, said, "My Ravens will win." Okay. I like the Ravens.
All right. You got a score?
22-19. I don't know if it's possible to get a score of 22-19.
I should say, that's an interesting score.
Right.
23-point field goal.
Right. A 1-point safety. Yes.
Okay. So we got PhD on wax, 22-19 Baltimore. I guess it's my turn. I'll drop the third verse. I'm going Baltimore as well. I'm going with a score of 31-24. The reason I'm going Baltimore is I think right now they're the more galvanized team. Right now you got reports coming out of San Francisco of Randy Moss on Media Day. Talking about, I don't like my role. You got Alex Smith, you know, talking about, you know, they're trying to talk about what he's going to be doing. I think right now, Baltimore is one team, one goal, one accord. They're all moving forward in one direction. Mark the same beat. They're all on the same page. Whatever cliche you want to throw out, this team is all in together. And I'm not sure if all of the Niners are on the same page. right now. Just, you know, and again, this is a very close matchup, and so I might be splitting hairs, and I probably am. But I think when you talk about a matchup this close, it's those small things, those little things that will make a difference. That extra effort to get that block that may change the game, that may bust open a run, to, you know, make that extra tackle, to get in on that pile and strip the ball out. You know, that little, those little extra effort plays are what are going to turn this game for either team that, for whatever team that wins. It's going to be a lot of small plays, a lot of small things that make this happen that may go unnoticed by, you know, the cameras. So I think right now, Baltimore is to me that team that has that momentum, that is kind of has that singular focus, that singular mindset, and it seems like all 53 guys have that singular mindset. So I'm going Baltimore 231-24. We got PhD. You want to revise your pick?
I'm going to go with the final score, 35-21.
Okay, so he's revising. So he's going to revise his 22-19 prediction. Good call. Good call.
Yeah.
So we got PhD weighing in, laying it down on wax, Baltimore 35-21, and we got D. Wills laying it down on wax. He's got Baltimore 27-24. So there you go. The Renegades have weighed in with our Super Bowl predictions. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Now, we're going to talk to you guys about the NCAA. As I said before, we're about to head into the month of February, all right? Start Friday, February 1st, short month, all right? Goes by in a blur. We got, but during that month, you have to do a lot of legwork if you want to dominate in March. You got to start planting seeds in February so that the trees bear fruit in March, all right? So we're going to help you start to plant some seeds, talking NCAA hoops. We're you know, by elbows deep in conference play. We're kind of starting to get a good feel for the landscape of who's who, who's faking the funk, who's keeping it real. So we're going to get into it RSG style. All right, so I got the GO team on deck. They ready to ride with me. The Renegades, you know, they're locked and loaded. So I got some questions for the fellas. All right? D. Wills, thinking about NCAA hoops, thinking about the overall landscape, who do you like so far as possible title contenders?
Hail to the victory.
Oh, sorry.
Well, it's been 20 years since those Wolverines were ranked number one. I like Michigan. And a lot of it is I think that I like the versatility they have on the perimeter, but those guys can get to the rack when you talk about Burke, Hardaway, and Robinson. But I also think they got some bigs who are pretty active when you look at McGarry and Morgan. I just think that they have the pieces to be a good team and to make that run. The other team that I like, and this is hard because I struggle with them, is Kansas. But I think when you think about Macklemore and some of the pieces they have there with Whitey, he's a big fellow who can control some stuff in the paint, particularly in a tournament, having a guy who can alter some shots down low. I like Kansas. The only thing that scares me about Kansas is that, you know, except for that championship run, they sometimes are fool's gold for people. But I think they have the pieces. So I like them a lot. But I think after that, there's a number of teams. There's one team up there that I think is overrated, which I know we'll get to.
Okay. PhD. Thus far this season, who do you like?
I like Michigan, but I'll talk more about Duke. Duke has been a really interesting team for me because I think they remind me so much of that 2001 team with Boozer and Jay Will. Not that they have that talent, but I think they have the makeup. And the Ryan Kelly injury, I think, is a blessing in disguise for them. If you think back to that 2001 team, Boozer suffered a broken foot and a loss early in the season. And it really made Duke have to play without him, and role players had to step up. To me, I think Mason Plumlee, man, is a guy, and I know with Duke big guys, they're like a dime a dozen in terms of how they do in the NBA, but I think this guy could be different. I mean, you got this guy that's 7'1", he's athletic, he can shoot the basketball pretty well, and he's a beast on the boards. So when you look at tournament time, I think Duke is going to be okay, because not only do they have the strong perimeter play, but they have a couple of guys inside that can make a difference. So those are the two teams that really stand out for me so far, Michigan and Duke.
Okay. All right, so you got Michigan and Duke. And D-Will, you had Michigan?
I have Michigan and Kansas I like. I'm still wavering them, but I like what I think they can be by the time you get to the end of the season.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you was all in on that Kansas pick, so I wanted to just double check.
Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it.
So you was kind of wishy-washy.
Yeah.
I was wishy-washy. I might see Indiana in front of them, but Kansas with the – and more of it's on what I think Jeff was it. Jeff – Is it Whitney or something like that?
Whitney.
Whatever.
Whitney. Like Wheatman.
Wheatman, whatever. I watch him play. You know, I can't get these names right. I'm trying to get them right. But what I like about him is that in the tournament, anytime you got a guy that can alter, you can't really practice for him. I think in a tournament, that's a good weapon to have. And he's the kind of guy that allows you to play well when you're not shooting well. And I think that's the key to winning in a tournament. You're going to have at least one night where offensively things aren't going well, and do you do enough on the defensive end and other things to generate points? I think, you know, if you look at those teams, that was the formula. The reason why I always went with them is that you always knew they could win even when they didn't play well offensively.
Okay.
My PhD would appreciate that nudge of the Spartans, but he didn't give me anything. That reference.
No, I caught you. I want to give you airspace. All right. The team I like, Florida. I'm in on Florida and Billy Donovan, what he's doing with that group right now, like the tempo and pace which they play at. I think they're one of the more athletic teams. I think they have a good balance of inside-outside with Casey Hill on the perimeter, some of the other guys they have on the perimeter with Patrick Young on the inside. I think they're one of those teams with a good enough balance where they shoot it well enough, but they also defend well enough, and they also can go inside. I like what they're doing there. I also like Kansas. And one of the reasons I like Kansas, and I know Hammer – was going hard on Ben. He kept breaking him up, but Ben McLemore is a player I really like. Kansas does well when they have a true lead, though. And I think McLemore is stepping up. He's a multi-talented guard, very good player. He has some James Harden in his game. Yeah, I said it.
I'm like, really? James Harden is the guy? I mean, this is your model? I mean, this is
what
the epitome guy. Really?
What I mean,
Harden?
Is he plays with a calm. He plays with a calmness. He plays with a pace. He plays like he's been here before, as old folks say.
Man. James Harden, epitome. Come on now.
Hey, wait. You're a 23-year-old all-star. Is there something wrong with that? Averaging 25, 26 a game. You got a problem with that?
Man, I've been on the James Harden train with you for every stop. But when you start saying this guy is the epitome of something, come on now.
I'm just saying he's got a James Harden quality to his game. I'm saying he plays the game with the same kind of pace that Harden plays the game at. You can't give me another two guard.
To see if they can come up with five James Harden qualities.
Other than his beard?
Yes. And he scores. And he's a good player. All right. You need two more.
Then they need to step it up.
All right. Fair enough.
They need to know more about the number three two guard in his league. All right. You just need to. All right. So I love Kansas as well. I'm in on Kansas. The one thing about Kansas that I don't trust is self. It's just something. Again, it's that whole Roy Hibbert rule. You know, he got his title and everything, but in the end, it's still just kind of like, I don't know about him sometimes. Just something inside of me says, watch out for that dude. I don't know. next question. We're going to keep it rolling. Mid-majors. Mid-majors are making a lot of noise. You got Butler making big noise. You got Gonzaga doing their usual thing. VCU, all right? We've been riding for VCU on this show for a minute. VCU is making noise. Wichita State's making noise. There are some mid-majors out there who are making noise. Of the ones that are putting their stamp on this season, which ones are you guys keeping an eye out for as we get? And which ones would you encourage our listeners to kind of read up on and get to know a little bit about? And if you catch a game, you know, you're flipping through the channels on a Saturday at 11 and you get to ESPNU or ESPN2 and there's some mid-major game on, what are some teams that you may want our listeners out there to stop at that game and watch that team for a little bit, because that may be a team that down the road you may want to – you may see them on your bracket and you may want to know a little bit about them. You take that one, PhD.
Well, I'm going to direct the listeners to the Midwest, to the Missouri Valley Conference. You have two teams from mid-major who are in the top 25 right now, Wichita State and Creighton. And I'll focus in on Creighton. Creighton, I believe, has the best pure scorer in the league, in the country, with Doug McDermott. He's a coach's kid. He's about 6'7". He can shoot the ball. He's about 50% from the field outside the arc. He's averaging 25 and 9, I believe, rebounds. And if you're not familiar with his game, think Wally Szczerbiak.
Wait,
Carmelo
James Harden. I can't use James Harden, but you can reference Wally Szczerbiak.
Touche.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm talking Wally Szczerbiak, Miami U, when he took over that tournament. Wally Szczerbiak, a cross between Wally Szczerbiak and Carmelo Anthony at Syracuse. Yeah, that's a lot of dog.
Right? Wow.
Yeah. That's what that kid has. Across.
I'm trying to fathom that in my head, man.
Yeah.
You're messing up my brain right now.
Yeah, it's going to be hard trying to wrap your arms around that, okay?
Oh, man. Okay. So Creighton is your mid-major lookout. D. Wills, who's that mid-major lookout you're telling people about?
Well, the thing about PhD, he took my Creighton because I was saying McDermott. Because anytime you have somebody who can score like that at any point, I love it. I think the mid-major, the two that we saw, and this tells you a lot about where basketball's gone. I don't know if people had a chance to watch the Butler and the Gonzaga game, but they were battling. I think Butler is a team, in some sense people don't feel like they're a mid-major, but I think that they're both those teams are poised to make a run here. And I just think I see those two teams as teams that could be busting into your Elite Eight. If I saw them in Elite Eight, I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay. And I'm gonna keep it tight to the best, and I got to stick with the home squad. I got to go VCU, man. I got to go VCU. The same way you guys pointed out McDermott and how having that single player who can take over a game in the tournament is really important. You know, even though we referenced Wally Szczerbiak, Wally Szczerbiak did that. He took over that tournament. PhD was spot on with that. The other thing that I think really swings games in tournaments is style. When you have a distinct style that teams don't see very often, the right matchups, certain teams can cause havoc in the tournament. And I use that word havoc appropriately because VCU runs that havoc-style defense. They call it the havoc D, where they're pressing, they're flying around, they're getting all over you. And then they come down, and they put a lot of pressure in your gaps on offense and kick out to shooters. They have a lot of versatile players. They have a very athletic team. You know, they're one of those teams that everybody's 6'5 through about 6'9, and a lot of interchangeable parts. They can switch a lot of screens. You know, they don't really care about who's guarding who because, you know, with their style of press, you just need to pick somebody up at some point, and we'll figure it out later. That style of play can cause trouble for a lot of teams, especially teams with young guards. So VCU is a team I look out for. They just fell out of the top 25 with a bad home loss to LaSalle, who also just knocked off Butler. So LaSalle is making some noise in the A-10. But I'll be on the lookout for them as well because that's going to be another team that is going to burst some bubbles. All right?
I mean, and you theoretically could have, I mean, even out of the West Coast, you could have three teams out there between Gonzaga, St. Mary's, and possibly BYU, who, you know, they all could make some noise as you start to think about going towards the tournament. Out of the three, at BYU is what at the 16, and I think they have probably the worst record here around some of those things. So I think when you look at some opportunities, I mean, that where those teams spread out around the tournament, there could be some noise coming out of that conference.
Now, one team I want to get you guys to weigh in on real quick, I want to get the Renegades to weigh in on. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Fellas, Kentucky, what's up? Cal's got the formula. You know, he's got the ingredients. And every year he buys new groceries and he puts together a banging meal. Something went awry. Some things came out the oven too soon. Somebody called him up. He got in a long conversation. Forgot about the mashed potatoes. They burned too lumpy, too hard. You know, things just ain't right in Kentucky.
Sound like you talked to experience
though. Hey.
Sound like you messed up dinner tonight.
Hey, not tonight, but. I got some notches on my belt for some bad dinners. I got Pizza Hut on speed dial. I got the number saved in the phone just in case.
That's right.
So what's up with Kentucky? What's going on out there?
Well, and I'm going to say this, and PhD will appreciate this because he's one of my close confidants around really helping me think about organizing my life. You know, there are certain people in your life that you talk about to them about, you know, really helping you think through your priorities. And in fact, anybody who needs a consultant, he's a great person to talk about from an organizational standpoint. And the reason why I say this is that he might come with the theory behind what I'm about to say, is that one of the things that he has is high risk, high reward strategy, but it's constantly require him to multitask at a level that is not sustainable, meaning that he is, at the same time he's trying to win, he's trying to recruit because he has to fill it so fast. He has to keep filling the funnel. And you can maintain that over time, but you can't guarantee that everybody comes in as a Derrick Rose, right, or a Davis. And you don't have enough time for it to mature, and he's always – He probably does a great job at it, but he's never at a point where he's able to really settle in and really groom these guys. Because by the time he gets to January, he's already got to know how he's going to reload, even as he's trying to make that run towards a tournament. That's a lot of pressure. That's not the same kind of pressure that, let's say, a Beeline's under right now, you know, or even Kansas is under right now, even though they might have some kids who are going, or even Duke. They might have some kids who are going,
but they don't seem like they're on that same type of frenetic pace. And I think every once in a while he's going to have years like this that it's just more difficult. Doesn't mean that they won't be there by the end, but he's going to have some struggles because it's not always going to come together because he's always running that cycle so quick.
Yeah. Yeah, then, now that's a great point. I mean, that's a very tough way to run a program because, you know, you're getting them in the door and you're pushing them out of the door while you're trying to bring in the next crew, you know. That's tough. I agree with you. PAV, what's your assessment of the Kentucky situation?
Yeah, I'm right with Devon on this one. I mean, he's playing Mays, who's a graduate student, Wiltner, who's a sophomore, and Harrell, who's a sophomore. Outside of that, they're playing all freshmen. And the theory holds if you get, you know, five of the top 25 players in the country out of high school and play them, but here's the key, they have to be NBA talent guys, where if you could still draft guys out of high school, most of those guys would have got drafted out of high school. And that's what he's had the last handful of years at Kentucky. He got the top, you know, five of the top 40 players in the country, but only one or two of these guys, probably just Noel, would be good enough to be in a league right now playing significant minutes. So it's a continuity issue right now. The reason they're 12-6 is because they're getting beat by teams who have played together longer and have more continuity. Probably not overall talent, but more continuity. And so the Calipari theory does not work unless you have top-tier guys who are also NBA talent guys right now.
I agree. And my perspective is that he has a team of guys who are not I'll put it like this. All freshmen are not created equal, all right? All freshman phenoms are not created equal, all right? And, yes, you have number one player in this particular group. You have some other top 40, top 50 guys. But in the end, do they have the basketball IQ to match their raw skills? And that's what you're looking at as for freshmen coming in who can be successful. Is do they have the basketball IQ? Because you know they have the physical tools and ability. They wouldn't be a top 40, top 50 guy without it. But then do they have the basketball IQ to come in, learn a system, figure out how to play together, and then figure out how to compete against guys who have been doing this for 2 or 3 years, who have been going through these battles for 2 or 3 years? I don't think they have that right now. Cal's going to have to earn his check to see if this team can make some noise and turn it around in the tournament. This is a team that, if I'm picking a sleeper, a major conference sleeper, a team from a major conference that could make some noise in the tournament, I'd pick a Kentucky because they're going to lose a lot of games in December and November and January because they're figuring out how to just be a squad, you know, how to come together as a unit. But this talent is still there. Their IQ has to catch up with their ability. And if Cal can get the IQs caught up, that's still a dangerous squad. I mean, that's still a very talented team with some kids who have a lot of ability and some potential game-changer type players on that team. So that's a team, if I'm looking at major conference sleepers, that's a team that I watch out for come March. In December, November, January, yeah, that's a team that's going to struggle a little bit. But the talent is there. The IQ has to catch up. And that's Cal. That's where Cal's got to earn his check. You know, and as you said, D. Will, that's where it becomes difficult, though. Because when you're trying to get the next group of guys in, it's hard to really focus and settle, as you said, focus and settle in on the guys you got in front of you and making them be a team and getting them to play the type of basketball you need to play to be a team. So, RSU listeners out there, keep your eye on Kentucky. Because, again, when we get towards the middle of February, if they start to get the ball rolling, you know, they may be looking at a 6 or 7 seed. That may be a squad that you may want to keep an eye on as a team that could cause some real damage to a bracket. Now, this whole situation at the top of the rankings with the number one team, it's one of those years, folks. Every 4 or 5 years, you have one of those years where it seems like it's just a revolving door of number one. The last time I can remember in recent memory is when Wisconsin rose to number one, when the Badgers became number one. It was kind of one of those years where it was there were quite a few teams that had a shot at it and couldn't hang on to it. I think Ohio State had gotten it, and then they got beat by the Badgers, and the Badgers got it, and then they got beat by somebody. And it was like for about a month, every time there was a new number one, they got knocked off. And this is one of those seasons. Is that a sign of parity or a sign of mediocrity in college basketball right now? Is it that there are just that many strong teams, or is that there aren't really that many strong teams and everybody's kind of even? What say you, PhD?
Parity. I think it's a 100% situation and argument for parity. I mean, you've got 18 to 22-year-olds playing inconsistent like 18 to 22-year-olds.
Right.
You know, so I think it's parity.
All right. And I agree with you. You know, that's why it's difficult to go undefeated in college basketball. As you said, you got to get 18 to 22-year-olds to show up 35 nights during the season. And you just can't bank on it. You just can't bank on everybody being there all at the same time, every night for 35, 40 games, now that they play in a college season. D. Wills, Will, what's your assessment of the revolving door at number one in college basketball?
I would say it's parity, and I would think even some of the number one losses have been good losses, except for when Duke just got hammered, and they were in a book. I mean, some of the top teams, Duke had probably the worst loss of probably the top teams when they got hammered by Miami. But I think when you look at those top teams, you know, for the most part, they've been good losses. Louisville went on, they lost like four in a row, but they lost at a Villanova, I believe. So I think they've had some good losses and some tough games, the games I've watched. So
okay.
I would say it's parity. I think there's some. It's been a while since I've consistently watched college basketball with some of this stuff, and I like how they're getting after it. I would say more parity.
Okay. Now you brought up the idea of a good loss. I have a special guest who's going to explain to our listeners out there exactly what a good loss is.
Wait a moment, Billy. I got a system set up over my own. You want to hear them? Here they go. Sometimes when you win, you really lose. And sometimes when you lose, you really win. And sometimes when you win or lose, you actually tie. And sometimes when you tie, you actually win or lose.
Okay.
Rosie Moran from White Man Can't Jump.
Rosie.
What made you started talking about bad losses and good losses, and I had to break that one out.
Right, moral victory.
I'm in a silly mood, I don't know. So yeah, I think it's a sign of parity. As you said, a lot of teams are losing to good teams on their home floors. You know, and then that's the way it goes. Again, it really is tough to maintain. And when you have a team go wire to wire number one or spend several weeks at number one, it's really a testament to that team's mettle and that team's mental fortitude. And you got to give your hats off when teams do that. Because nowadays with kids leaving early, it's very easy for young players to not show up on a night. And seniors and older players are used to being locked in. They may not have as much talent, but they're used to being locked in, and they know how to maintain their mental focus through the rigors of a full season. So as we wrap up this conversation, I want to hit the folks off, the listeners out there, and get them totally ready. Teams that are overrated. Every year you have these teams in your bracket. You pick these guys to go far. You know, last year I think mine was Duke, and I'm done with them cats. Every time I pick them once in a blue moon because because they do me wrong, and then I ban them from my bracket for like 4 years, and then they come off probation, and I give them another shot, and they do me dirty again. So Duke is like that squad for me, man. So these are some of those teams that right now are highly rated, but when it comes tournament time, you may have to watch out for these squads. I'm going to go first and give you guys mine, and mine is Arizona. All right? Sean Miller has got a core of young studs in the paint. They have a lot of young bigs. They have a lot of talent. What worries me about this team, and this is one of my key elements to my formula of how I pick teams and how I go through my bracket and select folks, guard play. They are young at guard, and they don't have strong guard play. And in the end, I think they don't have the kind of game changers, so to speak, that can overcome some of the issues and the they don't have playmakers. They don't have a guy you can get a ball to and he can go get his own shot, is what I'm getting at in Arizona. And I think when they're a team that the wrong kind of style can trip them up. So that's a team that if I'm you, I watch them over the next month just to see if they can get it, if the guards step up. If the guards step up, I think they'll be okay. They can get to the Sweet 16. And after that, it's anybody. You know, you want to get the Sweet 16 in the future, you can do from there. But that team definitely has to step up with this guard play. So I'm going to go Arizona as my overrated team. That's the team that if you're looking at them going far in your bracket, you might want to double check. And you just might want to watch them a couple times if you see them on TV over this next month and get a good feel for them before you really put a bunch of stock in that squad. PhD, your overrated squad.
Louisville. All right.
Well, I don't even have to speak.
Ricky P, you got no faith in Ricky P?
He is the Van Gundy of college sports. He chokes them to death down the stretch. He milks out every possession, takes the fun out for the kids. And he always has a brother from Dominican Republic or Puerto Rico at point guard. But other than that's what he does. That's the thriller for him. And those cats from Brooklyn, they're usually from the Bronx. They look at him like, let me go, baby. Let me go. And he's just crushing them.
Oh, man. Shout out to Patino, go ahead, point guard.
No. Keep going, man. You say it exactly how I'd say it. Keep going.
They are talented. They usually have talent, but he just and it's the reverse of what we always complain about with Bill Ryan sometimes about letting him go. It's just like, you know, he has the talent, but he pushes them. It feels like they shouldn't have to work as hard to score, but they do. Their talent seems like it's better than that, and they shouldn't have to work as hard to score. And so sometimes, I mean, he micromanages those kids. I just think they're exhausted by the time they get to the tournament. That's my thing. And every once in a while, he makes a run. He's one I don't bet on.
Okay. So Louisville, PhD, that's your pick too, Louisville?
Yeah.
All right. So we got Louisville and Arizona. All right. Louisville and Arizona. So over the next month, watch those squads. See how they're doing. If they don't pick it up, give them early exits on your brackets. All right, potential bracket busters now. All right, we got to be quick with these because we're getting to the end. We got to get the dog of the weekend. So real quick, potential bracket busters, PhD, your bracket buster.
Creighton, for the reasons submitted earlier.
All right. D. Wills, bracket buster.
This one, you appreciate PhD. I just think he's good as Michigan State. I just think that over time, Izzo works them through. They're going to have a crazy seed, but I wouldn't bet against them.
All right. Mine, Belmont. All right, the Belmont Bruins. Watch out. Okay, I will go into more detail, but we don't have the time, and we have to keep it moving. But I'm telling you, watch out for Belmont. Good team.
Yeah.
Watch out. I'm telling you, watch out. Called me the other day. Wasn't really doing a whole lot. Caught them on TV. They got some kids who can play. They're like a Cornell from a couple years ago, where they got a lot of kids, do interchangeable parts.
Nobody really focused on, but a lot of solid kids, veteran squad, Belmont.
We had Coach Bird on last year, and he said he liked this year's team, but he said next year is when they're really going to make some noise. So,
well, here it comes.
They just moved conferences as well. So.
Yep. So here it comes. All right. So now let me get my things in order. All right, here we go. I'm going to hit you off. We're going to get ready to wrap this up. Let's go. Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right. D. Wills, you know the drill.
We need more dogs.
I'm going to make this quick. Tiger Woods had an incredible weekend, built up a big lead, closed it out yesterday. But this is probably one of his best performances in terms of the quality of his short game from 100 yards in. He chipped one out of the sand. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that. That was incredible. I'm already trying to practice that shot. But he looks comfortable. You know, there's rumors of him being in a relationship. He looked like he relaxed. Something's going on. But Tiger Woods is my dog of the week.
All right. Yeah, Tiger did his thing at Torrey Pines, man. He kind of owns that course. He stepped away from his usual routine. He didn't go red shirt on Sunday. Or on Monday or whatever it was. You know, he kind of stepped away from his usual routine. He usually, you know, maybe Tiger's a little different now, man. We're going to have to keep an eye on that. You know, we're going to have to keep an eye on him this season.
He looked relaxed, and they said he was irritated, so he still had that edge to him. So he got some of the edge back without being apologetic. And I was waiting for him to have that breakthrough. It seemed like he was walking on eggshells for a long time. This is the first time I felt like he had that edge, was unapologetic about it. He looked like he was relaxed, which he hasn't been in a long time.
Yeah. So we're going to keep an eye on old Tiger, old Eldridge. PhD.
We need more dogs.
Think Gene Hackman in Hoosiers. Think Coach Eric Taylor on Friday Night Lights. Think Denzel in Remember the Titans. Those riveting halftime speeches. Well, then think about how high school kids will start talking about, well, coach, you got something in your hair, or what's that in the side of your mouth? You know, your shoes are messed up. This is what happened to Peyton Manning when he tried to give a rah-rah speech to his comrades for the AFC to play the Pro Bowl 100%. They were in the back rows laughing at him. you're still my dog of the week, Peyton, for giving it the old college try.
He tried. Hey, man. Peyton, I realize this off season. We on vacation, Peyton. We just happen to have to play this little football game. We on vacation, dog. Oh, man. So, my dog of the week, got to hit the button.
We need more dogs.
My dog of the week is Carmelo Anthony. Dropping 40 the other night. Got to give him a shout out. The Knicks are hanging in there. You know, I thought this team would fade eventually. And they're not as hot as they were. But they're keeping it together. They're figuring out how to play together. Do I think they'll challenge the Heat? No. But they're doing much better than I thought they would, and Carmelo is the reason. So shout out to Melo. I'm a Melo critic, and I have to give props. Just as D Wills has to give props to Flacco, I have to give props to Melo when he's carrying his squad, balling out, putting up near 30 a night. Hats off to him, having his best season of his career, in my opinion. So that's all we have for you all this week. Again, we thank you for your patronage. You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. This is me signing off for the fellas. B-Wills, PhD. We'll catch you next week, same time, same place. Peace.